Good morning, honorable members. Nkululeko, is honorable Maswanganye in and members from NA? Can we start?
Okay, I've admitted honorable Maswanganye, he is here, and some members of the NA and NCOP as well are here.
Okay.
I see.
Good morning, honorable members. The presenters today we're going to have seven
presenters today.
Okay, we're going to have seven presenters on the public hearing for the revised fiscal framework. We're going to start with the four and have discussions or deliberations, give members an opportunity to engage with those presentations. And then after that, we take the last three, then we engage. Honorable Karim was supposed to be with us. He'll be joining us a little bit later. Let me also take this opportunity to welcome all members from the committee. We are having a joint committee, select committee from NCOP and the Standing Committee on Finance in the NA. So it's a joint committee meetings. I'm fortunate to have Honorable Maswanganye, who will be helping us when I experience the network problem, because where I am, the network is very weak. You're all welcome, honorable members and the participants. To the presenters, you have been allocated 10 minutes each. By the leadership. So I think by 12 o'clock we will be done, because the next meeting has to start at 12. Hopefully we will be able to keep up to that time, but at the same time not compromising the engagement. You're all welcome. Can I check apologies, Nkululeko?
Chair, it's only Mr. Karim who will be joining us late. Other than that, there are no other apologies. Chair.
Okay, from NA, is it Alan?
Yes, good morning, Ms. Mashango. From Standing Finance, no apologies.
Okay, thank you very much. We can start and take the first a presentation from SMMEIC. I don't know who is leading or who is the leader of the presentation or who will be presenting to us, but I'm handing over the opportunity. Oh, there you are. Thank you very much. You can now take the platform. The opportunity is yours. Thanks very much. Members, you are encouraged. You're encouraged to open your videos if your network allows, so that it can be recorded correctly I don't know if it's live, but even if it's not live, I think on other streams it's live. So you are encouraged really to open your videos, but only if your network allows that. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. So good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, and thank you for this opportunity to present today. My name is Howard Johnson, and I am the CEO of SASMEA, which is the South African Small Medium Enterprise Association. But I'm also the chairperson of the SMME Industry Council, and I will be presenting on their behalf today. So in terms of what is So when reviewing the midterm budget policy statement by Minister of Finance on the 11th of November 2021, there were quite a few things that kind of were highlighted. And I just want to touch on those right now to kind of put into context what my presentation is actually about. So one of the comments were that government recognizes that we need more private sector jobs driven by a strong and growing investment climate. Today, there are 27.8 million South Africans on social grant recipients, and that's about 46% of our population. At the same time, the number of people working has declined. There's a critical flaw in our economy because of that, and South Africa continues to grapple with long-run unemployment. And in addition, we must remove the burden of SMMEs, the regulatory burden of SMMEs and cooperatives. And basically, we will investigate different forms of support for township, inner city, and rural enterprises. So that is the basis in terms of where I am starting today. So the SMME Industry Council, the Small, Medium Enterprise Industry Council, is made up of 12 associations representing over 15,000 SMMEs. Our main objective is to become the voice of small business. We want to assist in creating more sustainable SMEs and in turn create more jobs and reduce unemployment, thereby creating a more taxable revenue. So over the years, the mantra has always been that SMEs are the backbone of the country. That SMEs are the backbone of the country. But yet, you know, we the SMEs, we often feel that there's very little, like, real support from government. And it feels like we are adrift alone in a small boat in a vast stormy ocean. So now what we need to do is we need to walk the talk. We need to show that SMEs, that they are valued. So a real paradigm shift and a special focus on SMEs is now needed. This starts by getting every government department geared to really render services to SMEs and make them feel valued and not a burden when engaging with departments while addressing their business needs. It's also to make sure that every corporate comes on board and includes SMEs in their supply chains. And lastly, the Proudly South African and the Buy Local campaigns. This needs to be really pushed to give citizens so they can have a sense of pride, knowing that they are supporting the economy by supporting local businesses. And once we have that, then we have the focus on growing SMEs. So what we have to take cognizance of right now, employees are becoming entrepreneurs because of retrenchments, and now obviously they have to provide for their families. And yet we've seen after 27 years of interventions, it hasn't really changed the landscape of poverty. And in saying so, all the interventions over the years, we've discovered that not everyone is geared to become an entrepreneur. By simply pushing people into entrepreneurship, can also set them up for failure if they do not have the necessary inclination to become an entrepreneur. So it is counterproductive to push new SMEs into existing markets without creating new value chains. And by this I mean if a market now has a capacity of, let's say, X amount, and it's currently being serviced by X amount of businesses, you cannot push more businesses into that same market, into that same pond. It only dilutes the market share, and it also sets those new SMEs up for failure. But if the environment is created by government that's conducive for small businesses to thrive, then SMEs will start, and they will grow organically, which will lead to more sustainable businesses and job creation. There's a common misperception that SMEs are always looking for grants. The first thing, we did a poll recently, and one of the first things that we actually found that members were looking for in terms of the needs, they were looking for access to markets where they can sell their goods and services. That is their first need. And after that, there are a few things that has come out also. They're not looking for grants, but they're looking for easily accessible loans with lower barriers and much lower interest rates. So it becomes affordable, easy to get, and of course, easy to pay back. Another big issue is suretyship, because that holds the entrepreneur liable for all debts for factors very often beyond the control. And this is damaging to livelihoods and puts the business owner's asset at risk. I just want to elaborate here a little bit. So for example, let's say a person starts their business at the age of 45 and now it is thriving. By the age of 55, 10 years later, you suddenly realize that, wow, the business is growing, I can expand. And now they sign for bigger premises, they take on more machinery, employ more staff, and of course they sign for all of this in their personal capacity. Now by the age of 57, there's an external factor, for example, like the pandemic or a change in government policy or something that is beyond the entrepreneur's control. And now suddenly business comes to a grinding halt. So now the business starts to struggle. And then by the time of age 60, that business now has to close and that entrepreneur loses everything, their house, their car, their furniture, etc. So what is needed is a new suretyship insurance or a guarantee scheme. And of course, it can be paid for by the SMME so that at least they know that if the business is interrupted or something goes down, that there is something protecting them, which protects their assets. In the SME budget, that was if the SME budget that is allocated was also being spent in a manner that is more closely aligned with what SMEs' daily realities are. Very often the needs of small business is not understood when creating products and service to assist them. And then lastly, government guarantees that were issued during 2020 were channeled through like instruments like banks, for example, but they had high qualification barriers and banks are usually risk averse. So not many SMEs benefited or could access the assistance that was offered last year. So we say, let associations be consulted in the designing of instruments in the disbursement of loans or funding or something like that, because we have our ear to the ground. And we know what our members' needs are. And we know what is foremost on their wish list in terms of to get their business actually up and running. Just one or two more things here. The Department of Small Business needs to be a one-stop shop where SMEs can be channeled. So their needs can be channeled, for example. And that can then be dispersed to the various government departments for quicker responses. I mean, you know, we even have enough, for example, difficulties to get responses from the Department of Small Business. So, for example, if an SME is having problems with red tape in another department, it is the Department of Business that must, of Small Business, that must step in to assist. And this refers to my opening slide. If all government departments are working, focusing on SMEs, that they know that the SMEs is the backbone of the body, let's do that. And then, so what we're saying in a nutshell, it's basically we're looking for access to markets. So allocated budgets needs to be not given out as grants, but needs to be put out there to say, how can those SMEs access the markets locally, provincially, nationally, and internationally? And the big thing is to consult with associations when doing budget planning. We know the needs. We have the assessments and the focus areas of what is needed for SMEs. And lastly, there is that there needs to be a strong focus on SMEs throughout all government departments. And I think that is one of the most important areas that we need to kind of focus on. And my last slide there is just, in my submission, there was a whole, well, it's almost two pages around local economic development. I'm not going to go into too much detail about that right now, but basically we need to have the impact of the current and new legislation on small businesses understood, steps to create access for small business into their value chains, liaise with the community, with small business, so they can identify the needs within that local economy, and of course, basically, the methods to monitor and influence the provision of support services to the small business sector. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. You have tried to manage your time, and I didn't want to disturb you. Can you step off from this one and take the next presenter, Amandla Mobi?
Good morning, and thank you very much for allowing me to.
Where's the presentation? The presentation, Lileko?
The sharing has been disabled, I'm afraid.
Can you assist while she's speaking, please? Colleagues, support staff, secretariat, please assist to flag the presentation. You can continue, madam. And I think your network is also poor. Maybe you need to switch off your ES, please.
Struggling. So, the Amanda Zimbabwe community has actively engaged the Minister of Finance, sending messages and calling him to address some key issues, which include keeping and increasing the 250 grants and extending it until it is turned into basic income support. And some of those issues also include increasing all grants and securities. We have messages from members of the public to share with you. Apologies about that. My colleague will begin.
Bona, Cameron, Gemma Precious, Mama Abantana by four, Afanababil, Mantamazana Mabil. In a 37 years of age, and 7 years, the Pilange Grant, Yantanabam Abata, Nia Chablela Uti, Madi Kupu, and Bona Kuzong Caesar. Somehow, John Thomas Benzi, Bangutin, Pilo in Gans, and Isole, it's Bangiman.
Hi, my name is Mdomiyaise. I am a single mother of three children. I am unemployed, but I am breaking people's hay. My social release grant was denied because of the little amount I transferred into my account, which does not last me even a month. I am pleading to Minister Godongwana to please increase the tax of the rich, give more than 350 to all caregivers. We are suffering.
Ngingu kokuthoko wase Maritzburg endaweni yakampumuze piping. Ngingu gogo osebene ekhalazwe eningi ekanye nabanye ogogo base Maritzburg. Sesihambe saphindaphinda sihamba siya lapho ePhalamende siyocela ukuthi sicela ukukhushulelwa impesheni ngoba sithwele kanzima abazukulu emakhaya. Siphinde kaningi-ningi siphindelele. Sicele basibize bathi asize sothula ikhalazo zethu. Size sothula ikhalazo zethu ePhalamende. Uma sifika, sifika kuba abantu abasilalela impela bathi yezwakala indaba yogogo. Emva kwalokho siphinde emuva kuthule kuthi du. Sibuye siphindele futhi. Kube yiso sona leso basibize ukuthi asize iPhalamende lethu lesine-right ukuthi size kuyona. Basho njalo nomini. Sibuye sisi. Phinde futhi bangenzi lutho balalela impela izinhle namaqembu amanye ephendule yazwakala ngokuba sikhathi sithwele. Isikhalo eside sasuthi sithwele thina ogogabathwele abazukulu emakhaya esondlayo. NoKarim asibize size kodwa kugcine lapho. Nombo wenu wasibiza wathi asize ufuna ukusibona se-union building. Sayi union building. Lapho ke saphoxeka kakhulu. Ngoba yena asimbonanga wathumele sethumele umuntu. Kwagcina lapho. Koze sekuze kwafika i-COVID. I-COVID esifike yasivimba ke sakwazi ukuthula ngathi asisakwazi ukuthi size sizokhala kodwa sibe sisakhala. Savinjwa i-COVID. kodwa neCOVID isifundeya isiphindeya eda khona lapho kulezo nsizi zethu ezazinazo ekuhambe nabantu abaningi abaneCOVID. Sisasele sohogogo sisami kuleso sikhali sesikalini ngoba sasicelile sicele nokuthi at least kube nje isikali 2.5 imali yogogo.
Nna ke nagana gore ka nnete tšhelete ya bona tshwanetse e increase-iwe cause 460 ke nyane thata. Dilo gone jaanong di a tura ko dishopong diaparo. So how come gore motho a afforde diaparo le dijo ka 460 and then bana ba ya dikolong o kry-e le gore ngwana o nna kgole le sekolo tshwanetse a namele transport or ngwana o ya kretšheng tshwanetse a patele each and every month go ya kretšheng.
Sicela nakuye ungqongqoshe wezezimali ukuthi asibonelele. Ukudla kuyadura yingakho thina esingathathi intweni sicela ukuthi asilekelela sizwela aboniselane nathi abonelane nathi kukho konke siyacela ukuthi asisize uhulumeni wethu.
Hello, my name is Margaret Pozo. I'm an unemployed caregiver. Well, that is my only income. So, Manusa, I would like to appeal to you and to tax the rich people so that we, our money could be increased. Mr. Manusa, we live in such poor living conditions. We don't, that money is not barely enough for us to carry us through the month with our children.
San Bonan, Ikamaname Momo. Thembi Innocentia Hadeka nami ngingomunye othola imali le i350 ngingafisa ukuthi uminister of finance angazama ukuthi asikhuphulele hle imali lena because okuqala nje mina sengikhulumela kwamina nami esayidini lami ngihlala nobhuti wami o-disabled angikwazi ukuthi ngihambe ngiyofuna umsebenzi because akakwazi ukuzenzela lutho akakwazi kwa ukuzenzela lutho. So angikhona ukuthi ngimshiye ngihambe ngiyofuna umsebenzi ngihleli ngigade yena nemali le eyakhe akeholayo ye-grant ayikho enough cause sihlala nasemqashweni. So at least if ever thina lama 350 lanka bayazama ukuthi bawakhulise at least asimethe halfway although sometimes nayo ingekho enough kodwa siyacela ukuthi besicela uminister asikhulisele yona imali because ngempela siphila ebunzimeni yonke into imali la esihlala khona sibhadala irenti singasebenzi sithatha yona imali le yakabhuti wami engimgadile o-disabled kumele sikhiphe imali irenti
utholani ngubani gogo kwampumuza ephayiphini eMaritzburg bandla kade babesibiza ephalamende bethi asize size ngempela bethi bazosikhulumela ukuthi sithole imali yempesheni oba manje iy'ngane ziye esikoleni asinayo imali oma wazo abasebenzi iy'ngane zigibele omalume ngoba uma zihambela ziyahlukunyezwa manje asinayo-ke imali sicela nisisize bandla nisikhuphulele imali ngoba ugesi ubiza ngendlela esimanga nogesi wenu ohluphayo. Uhulumeni siyamvotela ngoba kuhulumeni wethu sithi uzosicabangela lutho akasicabangeli. Ulo umbo wenu wadlala ngathi ukuthi usikhuphulele imali wasinika R30 into engathi shu. Sesithembe yena-ke lo ngqongqoshe omusha ukuthi uzosifakela imali ukuthi akhumbule azi ukuthi zikhona izalukwazi ezidinga imali. Siyacela kakhulu ngathi nje ngasikhuphulela imali isinikeze o-R2,500 ngoba sinenkinga kakhulu ukuthi nje sicela nebhonasi bandla nisibhonasise ngoba manje asikwazi ukuthi sokwenze njani iy'ngane asikwazi ukuyithengela nemali iphelele endlini futhi nakukudla okunganeli ukudla kubiza ngendlela esimanga. Ngiyabonga imeni ugogo wakampumuzi.
Bengithanda ukuthi imali ikhushulwe noma ingane iyodwa mhlampe ihole noma u-700 ngoba kunabantu abaphila ngempesheni kuphela abangakwazi abangakhoni ukuthi bathole umsebenzi at least noma ingane uma ziwu-2 kube 1.4 ngoba kunemizi evuliwe through ini le mali le-grant owami umbono ilo if ungqongqoshe lo musha unyawuza ephemise faka imali akafake imali ebonakalayo
government should have to increase the old age grant to 2500. The reason is the food or grocery is so expensive, nobody can afford. Then we need money in order to survive. Secondly, some of the grannies are supporting kids, more than 8 kids in the family. And those kids, some of them are over 18 years, whereby they don't qualify for a child support grant. This is our government, and I know you are going to do something about this. We are suffering. We are suffering. Please help us. We rely upon you, our government. We rely upon you, Parliament. We rely upon you, Minister of Finance, and the President as a whole.
Nale Brown's message is, hi, the minister can't terminate the 350. He must increase it. I am an unemployed mother of 2 children, and that SASSA grant is not even enough for us. Please fight for us who are unemployed so that everyone must receive a basic income grant.
Some of our demands include keeping 350 and increasing it until it is turned into basic income support, which will be over the upper poverty bound. We also ask that you please reverse cuts to social spending, properly fund public institutions such as the CCMA and the NPA, tax the rich, increase sugar drinks, tobacco, alcohol, and carbon taxes, and also use mandate to please hold Treasury accountable and force them to do accessible budget public consultations with the marginalized majority. That is the end of our presentation. Thank you so much.
Am I audible, members?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. Very touching. And one has to confirm that it's not for the first time we get such a presentation. Starting from the previous term, in the fifth term, you have been coming to Parliament making presentation. Do we have Treasury on the line, on the platform? Nkululeko?
Yeah, yes, Chairperson, I saw someone from Treasury. I think it's Ukile or something like that.
Okay, okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. And siyabonga kuThabo Gogo basasiphilele. They survived basase khona bangaphela amandla. Can we then step to the next, the third presentation, Hila?
Hello, let me see if I can share my screen.
Okay, and you are so audible.
I don't think I can share my screen, can I?
Can is able to share the stuff? Okay, let's just see. Are we allowed to share the screen?
Yes, you are allowed.
Yes, you are.
Alan and Nkululeko, can you help, please? You are allowed to share the screen. Is it enabled?
No.
Yeah, there you
yeah.
are.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Please mind your time. Ne? Try to manage your time, but don't compromise the specific points that you want to share with us.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Molweni, igama lam nginguZimbini Madikiza. I am from Mthatha in the Eastern Cape. I am a health promotion practitioner working at HILA. So HILA is a coalition of civil society organizations that are advocating for the creation of a supportive food environment whereby there will be equitable access to nutritious food and affordable food in South Africa. Xa sithetha ngokutya, sicinga about that person who creates the food, sicinga about umama ophekela abantwana ukutya, orhalela into yokubana oku kutya akuphekayo ibe kukutya that is nutritious for the good improvement of i-growth, abantwana bakhule kakuhle. But unfortunately, healthy, nutritious foods are not affordable. Because even the child support grant is even less than the food poverty line, which is 624 rands per person per month. And also, unhealthy foods are the ones that are marketed kakhulu in such a way that ukhalela ukutya kwakutya all the time because go up in your face, ukubona okokoko, so persuasive indlela kumakethwa ngako I unhealthy food. Also, we have seen how the COVID-19 has shown ukuthi how broken our food system is. We are experiencing hunger. 1 in 5 households are reporting hunger weekly. And out of those households, a total number of 2.8 million are children. Unhealthy foods are very much available and accessible and very much affordable. Between 2001 and 2015, we saw abantu besela kakhulu sugary drinks. And that is a very threat when it comes to impilo yabantu. And abantu abasele kakhulu these sugary drinks are people who are coming from the economically disadvantaged communities. We face a very big challenge of izigulo ezingasuleliyo, which is your non-communicable diseases that are caused by our poor diets. People cannot make informed, healthy choices, as it is stated that it is an individual responsibility to make an informed, healthy choice. You cannot make an informed, healthy choice whereby the environment does not support into yokubana ukwazi ukutya okuhealthy, okufumanekayo nokufikelelekayo. We live in an environment whereby these unhealthy foods are very much very, very, very accessible and zilula, zifumaneka lula. As a result, 4 million people in South Africa are living with diabetes. And diabetes type 2 is the second cause of death in South Africa, ilandela emva kweTB. And also, type 2 diabetes is causing, it costs a public health system in South Africa. In 2018 only, type 2 diabetes costed 21.8 billion. It treated people who are diabetic. And also, the COVID-19 has shown the social and the political and the economic causes and consequences of health. I mean, it is stated in the Constitution in Section 27 that health and access to nutritious food is a fundamental human right. And also it is stated that the government has a responsibility, the state has a responsibility in making a point that these human rights are coming to a realization. And also, we are facing into yabantwana kuthiwa standing. So standing is the impaired growth and development abakhuli kakuhle abantwana because they are exposed to these unhealthy foods ukutya okungenasondlo. They are exposed to those foods and they don't have to be exposed to those foods because our constitution in section 28 protects them by saying that they have a right to basic nutrition, they have a right to basic healthcare, they have a right to social services whereby they will assist them in making a point that bakhula kakuhle, they are well developed so that bakwazi ukumamela kakuhle esikolweni and work towards improving their economic statuses. The South African government has got a responsibility in creating the supportive, healthy food environment in South Africa. especially for the vulnerable communities. So access to healthy food and environment is very important because it will really decrease this high level of non-communicable disease that we're seeing in South Africa. If people have access to healthy food, that will lead to the prevention of diabetes. It will lead to the prevention of high blood pressure. It will lead to the prevention of heart-related illnesses. And also, it will save money. And Sibonile bana type 2 diabetes, it costs the public health system. And whereas these food-related illnesses are preventable only if the environment is supportive, ukudla okuhealthy for maneka and affordable. When we are talking of healthy food environment or supportive food environment or equitable access to affordable, nutritious food, we are talking about an environment whereby there are policies and legislations and regulations that are put in place. We look at the implementation of health taxes, for instance. The health tax is part of a tool that is really working at creating a supportive environment. Because if we look at the health promotion levy tax that was introduced in 2018, we saw studies show that there was a reduction abantu bayebehlisa indlela abatsela ngayo isugary drinks. And also we saw industry really reformulating their products so that bazakwehlisa iswekile eninzi kokukutya. So a health promotion levy works. And the health promotion levy does not affect employment as it is stated by the industry. But the health promotion levy really helps the revenue in South Africa because ever since it was implemented in 2018, it raised about 5.8 billion rand. And if this health promotion levy was really taken to the 20% as requested by the World Health Organization, because now it's 11%. So World Health Organization is saying that it must be at 20%. So if the Treasury had really doubled the health promotion levy, our revenue would have had an extra 2 billion rand, and that money would really go to really creating this healthy, supportive environment. And also, there are other tools that the government can really put in place when we talk now of the policy and the regulation tools that the government can put in place. The first one is the one that I've saw of that's in Tetilengayo, which is the health promotion levy. That is a tool that can be used. Another tool that can be used is the implementation of the front of package warning labels. So that umuntu xa yothenga ukutya, I product ayithengayo ayibone clearly, but the product is high in salt, is high in sugar, and is high in fat as well. So that is a policy and a regulation that can be used. And another tool that can be used is really to raise the child support grant, at least imite the food poverty line, which is 624 rand. And also the other tool that can be used when it comes to what we recommend is really the tool of supporting the National School Health Nutrition Program so that okwakutya kutyiwa ngabantwana esikoleni and especially in the marginalized communities is healthy food which will really support them in their growth and their development because okwakutya sibona kutyiwa ngabantwana base primary ngabantwana abadala. And lastly, the recommendation that we recommend that the government's treasury has to implement so that we see a very supportive food environment is the adoption of the basic income grant for adults. That will really help the adults that are taking care of abantwana, especially omama, which are the ones abapheka okwakutya bahalele ba abantwana babo batye ukutya okuhealthy. So that is it for today. I hope that our treasury will really put an ear and implement these policies and regulations in time. Inkosi, ndiyabulela.
Diabulela, thank you very much for the presentation that is speaking to the vulnerable and what is good about the presentations here is that you are also coming with proposals. Treasury has to look into the proposals and the members will engage in them, see how feasible that is. We're going to take the last presentation for the first session from SAB. SAB, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of the Select and Standing Committees of Finance. Let me just put this in slideshow mode. As SAB, we have made a written submission to support our 2021 revised proposals to the fiscal framework and the revenue proposals. In general, the SAB welcomes the emphasis that the Minister has placed and he's made in MTBPS that says that South Africa does have long-standing macroeconomic issues of poverty and unemployment, and that's a substantial way. We also commend the Minister for highlighting that business remains constrained by the persistent obstacles such as electricity shortages, inadequate broadband spectrum, and red tape or bottlenecks within the process of establishing and continue to be a sustainable and viable business. The lack of progress in particular in implementing these reforms, including increasing the competition in electricity supply, has continued to constrain business growth, including the growth and some of the viability aspects as we consider going into the future as South African breweries. Over the medium term, the government has signaled its intention to move expenditure away from consumption and crisis mode towards enhancing investment. In particular, in the statements made in the MTBPS, the minister has acknowledged, Chair, that the public sector can indeed lay the foundation for this to happen, although this must happen in partnership with the private sector that has the ability to increase investment and create more jobs for the economy. Chair, I'd like to flag that in relation to the Minister's Q&A session yesterday, there was a sentiment that what is the government, what is National Treasury doing, in particular through Operation Vulindlela and other policy levers to increase and collaborate with the public sector, the private sector in order to increase investment and job creating opportunities. We would like to reiterate the statement to say and to also flag this question that what exactly is National Treasury and the government in general going to do to create less bottlenecks and less hindrances to the opportunities for SAB and other industry participants to increase investments and job growth. So the macrofiscal position of South Africa stated by the MTBPS state that the government's central policy over the next 3 years is to, of course, increase economic growth, broad-based economic growth, and to make sure that the public finances of the country is in a sustainable position. Our ask as SAB is very particular and very simple. When the entire economy has suffered during the pandemic and the beer industry has been particularly hard hit, we are asking the minister to assess and create certainty in the excise policy in particular. We ask that it is critical for our business to continue to be viable. And in this way, we would like that the National Treasury consider seriously keeping excise adjustments at or below inflation in line with the policy that guides excise policy taxes. Our value chain will be allowed to grow again, Chair, and this will allow our businesses, small and medium, to spread throughout the economy and create the multipliers we know that the beer industry and SAB in particular can create once given the chance to recover and to grow with the rest of the economy. National Treasury in particular, Chair, has repeatedly stated that excise policy is only a guideline and that there are no implementation variables to allow us to to create investments that are both in line with our business planning and in line with our costs. So in no way currently in the current excise policy framework, Chair, is there means for us to plan our business costs or future investments because there is no clear transparency and certainty around our excise policy. And this goes in line with what I think the National Treasury Budget Office head has stated yesterday, that there are some structural reforms within the current economy that aren't related to costs, that aren't related to increasing budget costs, and creating policy certainty around taxes allows us to plan not only our costs, but also our future investments in South Africa. In particular, Chair, looking at the MTBPS and its contents, we would like to raise two issues that we would like National Treasury to give us some feedback on. Firstly, we have no categories have grown above 2019-2020 levels, except for specific excise duties. The fact that excise duties have not recovered, Chair, is a direct reflection of the fact that the beer industry is still reeling from the effects of the pandemic and have not yet entered the path of economic recovery. Secondly, Chair, we would like to raise the fact that the tax base for increases in specific excise duties has changed from consumer price inflation to household consumption growth. This may decrease, Chair, the opportunity for the alcohol industry to plan excise costs as household consumption growth is more volatile than CPI, than consumer price inflation, and this may make it difficult for us to manage our costs and to sustain our business in its current form. So what we would like to know from National Treasury is if the beer industry will be given a chance to recover via targeted economic and tax relief in the medium-term budgets so that we can still continue to participate through the fiscus by paying taxes. And secondly, the rationale behind the rebasing of specific excise duty taxes away from CPI to household consumption growth. In general, Chair, we know that there is a message in the MTBPS around economic recovery, and we have tried to suss out from the MTBPS what are the implications for the beer industry. So we have noted that the government's efforts to manage the pandemic has been to support households and vulnerable households and firms, and this has required increased spending in the current year, which will then be elaborated in the 2022 budget. SAB's position, Chair, continues to be that the beer industry is still grappling with the economic impact of the pandemic, and this has led to 161 days of no trade and multiple restrictions. Despite the challenging business environment, we have continued to participate in the South African economy. And early in the year, SCB announced that it will make a 2 billion rand capital investment for the South African operations earmarked for next year. So we, in this sentiment, Chair, we are still noting that we want to participate in the economy. We are still concerned about what relief we have received from National Treasury in the form of taxes and in the form of the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan. We are still trying to sustain our businesses, both small and medium, across our value chain. And we therefore request that the National Treasury grant in the medium term below or no inflation increase in excise to allow for our sector to recover. In conclusion, Chair, we'd like to highlight that SAB has been an active participant in the parliamentary process related to the amendment of the fiscal framework and the money bills in general. We've also made several submissions to National Treasury as a means of addressing some of the shortcomings and gaps related to the excise policy, including the lack of transparency and certainty around the guidelines and how it has hindered us from understanding the nature and the rationale and the implementation of excise taxes. We still look forward to making fruitful engagements with government around excise, and we still participate on every platform that is afforded to us. We are concerned, Chair, that there is a limited engagement with National Treasury towards the 2022 budget because the timelines of the budget cycle have been pushed back. So we continue to push, Chair, for economic and tax relief from the government so that we can continue to be at a place where we can once again contribute to investment and growth as one of the key levers for pushing the country outside of the pandemic and into a space where we grow the economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Banda. Members, the opportunity, please, by show of hand, indicate if you want to engage. I saw the first one, and I'll rely on you, Nkululeko and Alan, to help me identify the members.
For now, it's Dennis Ryder and Moletsane. That's the only two hands.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Honorable Ryder?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues, and everyone else online. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm going to be fairly brief. Mr. Johnson, my first question goes to you and relates specifically to your comments around the take-up. And first of all, let me say I welcome your presentation, and I agree with a lot of it and the sentiment certainly in it. The one thing I want to challenge you on, Mr. Johnson, is your comments around the take-up of the the loan funding from the formal institutions that were part of the recovery package that government put forward during the past year. And you said that the take-up of those loans, you know, because of the banks are risk-averse, et cetera, there wasn't huge take-up of that stimulus, that portion of the stimulus package. I want to challenge that, Mr. Johnson, because when we saw the low volume or the low numbers that were coming through in terms of the bank-sponsored funding or financing, we actually found that it was actually not an issue of the banks turning down applications, but it was more a case of people were not applying. There were a low number of applications. So you say that the problem was from the bank side. The banks are saying that they didn't receive their applications. Mr. Johnson, I'd love you to give me some examples where people did approach the banks and were turned down for that funding, because I actually think that a lot of the responsibility for this falls on the SMME owners themselves. I don't think that there were a lot of people making application. And it may be a case of people resigning themselves to, well, the bank always wants X, Y, and Z. I think that wasn't the case with this portion of the stimulus package. And I do think that people were just not willing to come forward and actually make the applications. So that's my challenge to you, Mr. Johnson, and I'd love to hear your response. To Mandela Mobi, yes, I think the reliance on grants is a sad indictment on where we are as a country still. I do want to, you know, put in the caveat that I think at the moment our biggest export to South Africa is taxpayers, and we need to maybe think of a little bit of a different or a better way of funding increased grant funding or additional grant funding other than taxing the rich. I think that we're finding a shrinking pot of taxpayers in this country, and not only because of people emigrating or leaving the country, but also because of the fact that even those that were earning salaries before COVID are no longer earning salaries. But yes, I think that I share the concerns raised by many of your of the voices that we heard during your presentation. And well done on a slightly different take on a presentation. I thought that was good. The quality wasn't perfect, but I think that you managed to get your message across quite well. To Hila, Ms. Madikiza, I strongly support the sentiments of your presentation. I'd just like to hear a little bit more from the school feeding schemes. You didn't mention too much about how well those are doing. And if they are having an impact. I know that many provinces have spent quite a lot of money on school feeding schemes. From being from the National Council of Provinces myself, I'd love to hear some inputs about on the ground how that's working. So if you can maybe fill us in a little bit on that. But then I think that the targeting of sugary drinks, I think, is a bit of a lazy response and, taking the easy way out, if you want. You know, I think that sugary drinks get a bad rap, and because they're an easy target, they get nailed, if you want to say it like that. But, you know, the prevalence of pup in our diets, I think that is one of the bigger issues. And the fact that we default to pup in many feeding schemes, because pup, I think, is a bigger cause of diabetes than sugary drinks. Perhaps you'd like to comment on that, or is that too unpopular a subject to go on to? To SAB, Ms. Banda, I think your presentation would have been much better received if you brought a few samples across with you from SAB. But I do understand that that's difficult in a virtual environment. I think that I agree with your call for planning and consistency from Treasury, and particularly with a request for a little bit of an acknowledgement that the alcohol industry generally, and I want to wrap you over the knuckles, Ms. Banda, and say you didn't have to only restrict yourself to beer. You could have spoken on behalf of the entire industry. I think the entire industry has suffered tremendously during the past, almost 2 years. And I think that Treasury needs to take cognizance of that fact and certainly take it into account with the excise duties. But definitely, in terms of the planning, to have a little bit more open communication and to ensure that there's more certainty to some of the big investors. And, I mean, here we're talking about SAB, we're talking about Heineken, we're talking about Distell, we're talking about the wine farmers, we're talking about a lot of industries. And the fact that, you know, SAB is in a market that is evolving and we're seeing a lot more craft brewers coming to the fore. And even some of those are starting to export now. So I think, yes, I thought your points were well made. Chair, thank you very much for the chance.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ryder. Ntate Mletsane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine it's not a question, it's more of a comment to the Amandla.mobi. I've been listening to their presentation, and I'm sure this is the third year now I'm listening to them. This group of gogos, they've been sacrificing a lot to come to Parliament and to put their plea to Treasury. Sometimes they were even here in Cape Town to an extent of even struggling to get a place to sleep. They are from union buildings, with one mission, just to say the government must give them attention and give them more to increase their grants. I think it's a high time now that the Treasury must take the gogos seriously, because they have done whatever they have tried to for years now to say to forward their plea. And the very same gogos, they contributed to this country while during their days of waking. They were paying taxes. So I don't understand why can't we, is the Treasury just closing their eyes? Because they've been saying this for years now. The Treasury should have been looking at this matter and saying at least to try and get some funding in order to attend to their grievance. So mine was just to say to the Treasury, please take the gogos very serious now. It has been some years. They have been singing the same song for every year, year in, year out. Can they be given attention so that their plea can be given a serious attention? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Noxie. Honorable Abrams.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Comrade Dix. Greetings to you as Chair and all members, and maybe just to appreciate the people who have taken the opportunity to come to or to participate in the program. For me, that is the first line of the government's generosity to make way for each and every one of us to express themselves so that we make known the challenges that are facing people in their different corners. Indeed, Honorable Murat. Okay.
So indeed, I don't know what happened, but you can continue.
Okay, thank you, Tex. Honorable Moletsane is correct to say that the gogos have been coming to Parliament. But, Honorable Chair, I want also to express my disappointment because I am not sure what the people who bring gogos to parliament, because one of the gogos did indicate that they were called to parliament. And I'm not sure what is said to them in terms of promissory approaches. So I think we need to be sensitive in that regard, because no one is ever certain of what the public purse will be able to do. You know, secondly, for me, the fact that their plea has been communicated, I do not remember it. You know, sometimes, Honorable Chairperson, when you get an increment, it does seem to be a minute kind of increment. But if you think about it in the sense that you are not the only one getting it, you know, take the question of the 350s. The 350 is an amount of money that is below the living wage, for example. But it's an amount of money that government gives to millions of South Africans. And when you think about it, it multiplies and becomes a lot of money. I know that the plea here is for an increment, which is appreciated. But I do not want to look down upon the fact that when we were faced with a pandemic, the governing party, through its president, came up with this kind of unemployment benefit, which is a sign that the government cares about ordinary people of the country and does not want to see suffering in the process. So yes, I might not be providing answers, but I'm just flagging these things so that we appreciate the fact that we are not dealing with a government that simply ignores the people. We are here today with the stakeholders because we do have this hope that having listened to the people, the government through National Treasury will see what to do in the various areas. But I don't want us to despair if very little happens, so that we know that already a lot has happened. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Comrade Nosi. Honorable Karim, you're next.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, obviously, all of us in different ways, to different degrees, agree on this need for a grant. We also agree that 350 rands is not enough. So it's not like any moral or principled objection to it. In fact, Chairperson, as you know, last year, at least earlier this year, let me read to you what we said in our fiscal framework report, right? It reads, while recognizing the economic, financial, and other challenges, the committee recommends that in view of the COVID related huge job losses, increasing poverty and inequality, the National Treasury and the government seriously consider a basic income grant after the necessary consultation with the relevant stakeholders. We refer this matter to the Appropriations Committee to give further attention to. Obviously, in terms of the Money Bills Act that we passed, this is an appropriations matter. It's not a fiscal framework matter, although it's related to that. But secondly, obviously, civil society, they don't draw the distinction between what belongs to fiscal framework and what belongs to appropriation. That's fine. We understand that. But in our processing of the matter, we have to bear in mind what the law that we passed says. So it's neither here nor there. So in other words, just to assure them that we do have a standing commitment to it. And it is something that the committee, no doubt, unless it's changed its view since February this year or March this year when we adopted this fiscal framework report, will retain that presumably exactly as it is or maybe add to it. But what we have to point out is that some 46% of the population now is getting a social grant. This is, by all accounts, the highest percentage of any country's population. It's sad that it has to be that, because people should ideally be in jobs, and it's not their fault that mostly that they're not. So all I'm saying is the issue isn't that we disagree, nor do we think 350 rounds is enough. It's simply what we can do. Now, I hear the minister saying that, and I think it's true what he says, that, and we say it ourselves, it's not a decision for Treasury alone to make. It's a government-wide decision. Treasury can have its point of view, but ultimately, if the cabinet as a majority agrees or by consensus on this, then Treasury has to give effect to it. Treasury has to point to the possibilities and the limits of it. But the decision is government's. The decision is the ANC's also, primarily as the majority party in the government. But it's also Parliament's view that we do support it. This is something we might want to review now, but this is our standing position. So all I'm saying, Chairperson, is the minister's been talking about, well, if you want to continue this and have a basic income grant, then you have to give somewhere else. Now, that's where the Appropriations Committee and ourselves together need to propose concretely where the money can be found. I mean, I don't want to get controversial, Chairperson, and nor have I thought it through, and nor do I have the stats before me, and nor is it necessary for me to have that right now, if I couch it like this. One area, for example, right, that we could look more carefully at is DIRCO in foreign affairs. How many people we have, how many missions we have, how necessary are they, and so on. That's one area I'm just taking as an example, Chairperson. But it's something the Appropriations Committee can look at, because that committee knows more about where money goes and what criteria is used and where you can move money around. So one of the things we could do, Chairperson, to take this forward is to see where we as a committee, or committees, the Appropriations Committee, in our case, in the NCOP, it's both of us there and the same committee, but with Mr. Buthelezi's committee, Committee Buthelezi's committee on the NSR. So that's what I think we should do. But people need to know that we're not opposed to this as far as I know. And until that is amended, that's our standing position. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. Honorable Maswanganyi, Isoko Kone.
I'm okay with the comments of the colleagues, Chairperson.
Okay. I think I'm going to go back to the presenters to clarify where clarities were sought. But also from my side, I think these are serious matters that needs the attention of cabinet. Because I understand that Treasury alone cannot make a decision. They can recommend and take this, because this is part course that you need to apply your mind on as Treasury and take the matter elevated to cabinet after having checked where possibly can you intervene. But I share the same sentiment as Comrade Knox, that it might not be possible. We are not dismissive. We accept, we are with you, as you have said, Abokoko and others. You are really raising valid points. But the economic status of the country, will it allow us to do all these things? We are not saying these are luxuries or nice to have. They are very important. They are necessary. But it needs to be elevated. I'm going to request the presenters as they follow each other, and then thereafter Treasury to comment on the discussion. But my feeling is that the matter needs to be elevated to the cabinet. If you can also comment on what I'm recommending. Thank you. We'll start with who's the first presenter? Who was the first presenter? SME industry company or corporation?
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And as the previous, let me just get my video on. Thank you for the comments and the question asked by the Honorable Member. I think that the question that we need to ask here is about when you mentioned that there wasn't a high uptake of people applying for the assistance. Firstly, I will get some examples if needed. There's some examples where people were actually refused financial assistance. But to come to the question about the low uptake, it all starts with the perception and the confidence in whether they qualify or not. So, for example, you know, if you miss a debit order or you miss a loan or overdraft repayments, or you had a return debit order on your bank accounts, or you're behind on your bond, you are unable to qualify automatically. So the bank looks at and asks for personal information and surety too. They look past the registered entity straight to the business owner. So whether the business is in good standing or not, that is irrelevant. They look at the business owner too. So they look at that, and that will be the deciding factor. So, for example, when the bank started their assistance to help people with their, with the bonds during the COVID pandemic last year, there was a list of qualifying criteria that the banks had posted on their websites to assist people with bond repayments, kind of thing. But one of the first qualifying criteria is your bond must be up to date at time of application. So if you've missed a week, a month or two before during the pandemic, it means your bond's not up up to date. Therefore, you don't qualify automatically. So when you read that, there's no need to even go further to apply or to get assistance, because they know you will be stopped right there, kind of thing. So where many SMEs are constantly refused financial assistance because they don't qualify, It is right or wrong, that they don't want to apply again. It's like they feel that, why should they? Why must they go through all the effort, all the heartache and what they need to do to be able to get the assistance, where they know at the end of the road, when they look at their personal profile, they're going to be refused, whether that entity is in good standing or not. And the last point I want to just say, for example, no CEO or director, a board member of any large corporation or any state-owned enterprises, nobody signs personal surety for that company's actions. Yet, for a small business, it is immediately personal surety you must sign in your personal capacity, even though your company is in good standing and it's operating and it shows a track record that you are growing. And I think that is also where many people and many SMEs fear, or they say it's a waste of time because we are not being assisted. The access to the loans that we need, the access to the money that we need, the criteria is far too high, the risk far too high. And that also hinders SME growth, because why must I sign for another 2 million loan if I want to grow my business with property, machinery, etc.? I've shown the track record, but yet I know if anything happens in the next 5 years, I am responsible for that 2 million rand. Thank you. Sorry, Chair, you must unmute.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And thanks for the responses, clarities. Obi, to clarify and give responses.
Thank you, Chair. So the first thing that I would like to address is the comment by Mr. Ryder about the reliance on grants. Now, this is the most common idea that a lot of people hold, that asking or calling on the government to increase grants will just create some form of reliance. And I think this is a very ignorant and irresponsible thing to say, because right now, a lot of people in South Africa live in poor conditions. The majority live in poor conditions, right? We're in a very bad economic state right now. A lot of people are unemployed. A lot of people are starving. If really people had other places to go or other places to, inverted commas, rely on, I do not think so many people would be calling and asking that grants are increased. Imagine going to a gogo who is 85 years old, who relies on a grant to support her family, and telling her that, you know, this thing of wanting to increase grants over and over again is not going to work. We need to come up with other measures. Other measures like what? Because honestly, nobody wants to survive on a social grant. Nobody wants to survive on a 350. But because people do not have a choice, people do not have anywhere else to go to, this is the only place where they are able to make their demands and tell, you know, our leaders, tell the government that please help us. So I really do not like that. And we as the Amandla.mobi community do not like that. And we would like to call out every single person who thinks like that to just sit and think about it, because it is very, very an unkind thing to say. Another thing is that Mr. Ryder said we must come with other measures, right? So many times, like, the goggles have gone to the parliament to ask that their grant is increased. And there was a point where they were told that where will the money come from? Show us where the money will come from. So what we did as the Amandla.mobi community is we told the government to please text the rich, right? So there's a link in the chat box right there. Organizations such as the BJC, the IEJ, tabled concrete plans of how that could work. But still, it is not happening, right? Billions of money are lost to tax havens and illicit financial flows. So basically, we are just being held ransom by the rich. We have over 300,000 wealthy millionaires in this country who, if they are taxed more, will not stop for even an hour or even a day. And another thing that I would like to address right now is so the comment by Honorable Abraham about people feeling like promises are being made. I'd just like to clarify something here. So the Gogo mentioned Honorable Yunus Karim about one of the comments he made during our presentation the last time, right? So this comment is not putting anyone or putting Honorable Karim on the spot. The goggles, they watch these things, they listen. So she was just saying that even one of you, you know, stood with us and said, please listen to the goggles, please listen to the people. And saying that they feel like promises are being made by personal, by a specific person and are relying on that is not a nice thing to say, because then these goggles listen, and when they hear somebody speaking on their side, they have hopes and they believe that if somebody on a high caliber speaks for us, then it gives us hope. It shows that we are speaking and we are being listened. So basically we are not saying that Treasury makes all the decisions and stuff like that. We are saying Treasury has the power to address these issues. Treasury has the power to consult those hit hardest by the budget. Treasury has the power to find the money and increase grants and allow people to live in dignity. And a lot of times it is said that other measures need to be found to help people. I don't want to touch the issue of jobs because it can be very controversial, but a lot of times things like that are said. We are saying that while people still wait for those measures to be implemented, allow them to live like human beings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I now allow Hila, Ms. Ndaba?
Zimbini, yes.
Okay.
I think the two is into as is a good thing. It's the school nutrition program. Yes, as you have, my school nutrition program is doing an amazing job. Like there are many children that are affording to the school nutrition program, more than 9 million, but we can do more. But the other thing that we need to look at is really monitoring those food baskets. Are they really healthy food? Are they food that will really support the growth and the development of children? So the school nutrition really has to be healthy, nutritious food. And then when it comes to the PAP-causing diet, my colleague will also add on this. I mean, there's really nothing wrong in really having PAP, but as long as it is like in a well-balanced diet, then I'll hand over to my colleague to add.
Yeah, and I think we just have to be careful with maybe stigmatizing individual family food choices. Because this is a system issue, and I think we need to have supportive mechanism to actually support people to afford, you know, to make food, healthy food available, accessible. So I think it's important that we can deal with system issues and be in supportive of the families and people who live in South Africa who are living below the poverty line to access. Sorry? I think we have lost the chair. I think the chair was saying something.
I was saying we could not hear your part as
we're losing you, Chair.
Chair, can you try and switch off your video?
Requesting that you stop. Honorable Maswangani, okay, am I audible now? Maswangani, yeah. Can you please check over? Yeah, am I audible?
No, audible, Chairperson.
Okay, I was saying to Hila, the second response from the colleague there, I lost him. I don't know if you heard him. I wanted him to summarize what he said.
Okay, I'll repeat, Chair. I was saying we have to be careful with individualizing diet because the issue of availability, accessibility of food, it's not really an individual choice. It's a systematic issue. That's why we are proposing different interventions to support families, to support people who live in this country who are living below the poverty line to access and afford healthy food. So that's why we like, even PAP, if we have a good fortification program that is supposed to be there, PAP already has protein and starch. And if it's eaten in right portions, with the combination of nutritious, other nutritious food like veggies, it's not actually a bad, product in on its own. So I think that's what I was raising, that we need a supportive environment for people to access and afford healthy food, and not always look at individualizing and stigmatizing the decision of individuals, in terms of what people eat as a in the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. SAB?
Thanks, Chair. I think we'll just use this opportunity to reiterate, and we thank Honourable Ryder for supporting our proposals and our insistence that firstly, National Treasury provide us with greater certainty and transparency around the excise policy framework and include us in the process of setting excises per year. In particular, we'd like to highlight that we're still an industry that is in economic recovery, and we would like some sort of proposal including low or in line with inflation excise adjustment in the medium term to allow us to recover across our value chain. Secondly, Chair, we'd like to highlight also that we haven't received the sort of economic and tax relief afforded to various industries and private sector players, and an excise break or economic relief in the MTBPS or in the medium term, so long as the knock-on effects of the pandemic still exist. We would like to receive room to recover and to continue to be inclusive, or included rather, in the creation of jobs and investment that Treasury in general are driving in their structural reforms message, including the Minister in what he said and his maiden MTBPS. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Treasury? Team Treasury, who's going to speak on behalf of Treasury or as a team? Who's going to start? Am I audible, members?
Yes, Chair, you are.
Nkululeko, where is Treasury?
We invited them, Chair. I saw there was a participant here from the ministry.
Her name is
Cindy.
There's Hermes on a poll here. Let me just quickly.
Okay, she's no more on the platform.
I think he's checking him here, Chair.
We're just going to check. Henny Swanepoel, she's charged to speak on behalf of Treasury. I'm just conducting her. She's on the line here.
Okay.
Yes, Henny Swanepoel is on the line, Mr. Bato.
Okay, Swanepoel, please, I hope you have heard what has been raised here. We want the comment from... or we expect comments from Treasury. Swanepoel? Oh, I think he or she is also struggling.
Chair, can we propose that we conduct her and then we give her an opportunity? I think he might just be on another meeting. I think he was dealing with two meetings, but I'll just conduct him to come in as well. Sorry about that.
Okay, maybe we need to go step to
Chair, the... It's Alan. Sorry, Henny just posted in the chat group that he's having trouble with his connection.
Oh, okay. Is that Alan speaking?
Yes, it was me, Chair. Henny indicated on the chat group or on the chat that he's having trouble with his connection.
Okay.
So, maybe if he's online now, he can just log out and back in again. Hopefully that will fix the issue.
Okay. I'm proposing that we go to the second session and hand over to the chairperson. The co-chairperson and Tate Maswanganyi will be having Auta, Saika, and Kosatu, and then he will respond thereafter. I'm just thinking that maybe we might disadvantage other members, other organization who presented earlier. But then we'll need to have a wait from Treasury. Tate Maswanganyi, I'm handing over to you. Can you steer the ship? Steer the ship, please, Tate Maswanganyi.
Chairperson. Well, hello, Chairperson. Come here, Chairperson.
Yes, Chair, take over. My network is is troubling me now.
Please. Okay, I'll look.
It's Saika, Outa, and then Kosatu.
Okay, I'm also attending to something. Let me ask Comrade Njandu to chair in the meantime.
Honorable Njandu?
Mshakaz, where are you?
I think while he's still sorting himself out, I hope I'm still audible. Can we allow Alta to flag their presentation if they are able to share?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Alta, over to you. And Honorable Njatu will be facilitating.
Thanks, Chair. Is my screen visible?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good morning to all the honorable members and everyone else presenting. We appreciate the opportunity to be here as always, and I hope all the members and everyone here has been well. Just to give an overview of the structure, the content of the presentation, start with an overview and look at the key themes that we heard from the minister. And we titled the presentation Actions Speak Louder Than Words, Chairperson, because there wasn't much new in the statement, and we understand that there is very limited fiscal space for anything new. And much of what I'll say here today, I think, would be familiar to the committee, to the committees, because the situation really doesn't seem to have changed over time. On the contrary, it's become more difficult. So the challenges of the context in which we make the presentation is really the difficulties we're facing: state capture, COVID-19, uncontrolled spending and maladministration. And in particular, Chair, I think the overarching theme is that we've been spending money without really getting returns for that expenditure. And I understand that's an appropriations matter, so we do look at it from a very high level, not going into too much detail, just focusing on the key things that the minister had announced. We agree with the statement very much, Chairperson and members, that reform should focus on improving competitiveness, productivity, and investment. And all these things should really increase employment. And the problem with that is we agree with the statement, but in practice, government has made different decisions. In particular, for example, SAA has been supported despite it being outcompeted. We've seen low productivity as a result of unqualified people in very important positions in the public sector, making decisions as far as procurement is concerned. And we've also seen the introduction of digital platforms, which COVID-19 accelerated, and that's welcome, but many of these platforms are very inefficient and costly, and just causing people a lot of frustration. That's, for example, auto, which is being rolled out in the rest of the country, but also driver's licenses, which have really landed in a very big backlog. And again, we concerned that there's nothing new to attract investment. There were no radical announcements except stated intentions to cap our debt, which is very important, but also to decrease the deficit. But there's no clarity on exactly how that's going to happen. What we did see is an announcement to increase public wages, and we're very concerned with the fact that there doesn't seem to be a proportional increase in performance and public service outcomes for that increased expenditure. So in closing, we'll recommend that there has to be a lot of trade-offs going into next year, and we hope to see those very significant trade-offs that will be permanent from February next year onwards. To start with local government, honorable members, this is a very serious issue. I think we're all aware of that. The recent elections really reflect how people are feeling about local government and what's happening there. And we're seeing issues with basic service provision like water and sanitation. 23 municipalities are not paying Eskom what they've agreed to pay, and they are in full or partial default. We've seen SCOPA having to come in, which really shouldn't be their role as far as I understand. But provincial COPTAs and treasuries have not implemented Section 139 appropriately. The number of municipalities under administration appears to be increasing, but that administration and that intervention does not seem to be effective. On the contrary, in some cases, it's simply continued to worsen. And we do think there's a stronger role that provinces need to play, which they haven't been. And in particular, we're concerned about the minister's statement that political and administrative leadership has to really be the core of the solution in local government, but that's in many cases been the core of the problem in local government. So we believe that civil society and civic organizations and communities in general need to be a part of the solution. There's an enormous amount of wasteful and fruitless expenditure ongoing. So we believe that budgets need to be opened up for public scrutiny. And before, Chair, there's been statements that people aren't really interested in coming to public hearings in local government, that there's no uptake, that people aren't keen to participate. And I think the response was that if there was a perception that their participation could actually make a difference insofar as expenditure and budgets are concerned, we strongly argue that they would be interested in participating. State-owned companies, there was a statement that there would be no additional funding for this. However, more than 700 billion rand worth of SOE debt has been guaranteed by government and the road accident funds liabilities. 73 billion rand of that will mature in the next 3 years. This includes, for example, Eskom, SAA, the road accident fund itself, SANRAL, and Denel. So the statement really said that guarantees with conditions for SOEs with strategic importance will still be granted, but our argument is that this still constitutes a fiscal liability like any ordinary bailout. And this is especially true because many of these SOEs are continuously failing to perform their mandates. Eskom is a brilliant example of that. That's really causing difficult challenges for businesses and for households on a daily basis. But we do welcome the announcement that there will be more private participation and investment in the rail and energy sectors. This is a long time coming, honorable members, and we believe that these interventions could have happened a long time ago. There was no political will to do this. And yet we are quite happy that it is happening now. We look forward to seeing that unfolding. SANRAL and ETOLs, a difficult matter, is always one that's been kicked down the road. 15% of motorists pay, honorable members, and the scheme has not been abandoned. And it's very perplexing to see how government is holding on to this scheme despite its failure. Around 10 billion rands worth of unpaid e-tolls has accrued over time. And at this point, it's become such a problem that SANRAL itself is saying that there's a need for a new road infrastructure funding policy. They themselves are stating very unambiguously that this is a problem that is causing disruption in their balance sheet that has to be resolved by government in a comprehensive and proactive way. We calculate that about 23 billion rand in total from various sources has been handed over to SANRAL over time since the inception of the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project. And this would have been enough had it been put forward in the beginning to pay for the entire project. But this unfortunately now includes debt, which is still building up over time. We'd really like to see some transparency in how that scheme is being reactively financed. In terms of remuneration, which seemed to be the only significant increase, 20.5 billion rand additionally going to that, the minister stated that that might have to come from infrastructure expenditure plans next year, and this is very concerning. Our key argument is that capital expenditure should be prioritized to secure returns, to ensure growth, to ensure that there's more money in the public sector to spend on social care and other items that are currently being crowded out by debt. And we do really have a problem with debt being incurred to maintain current expenses, which give us no returns, and remuneration is the best example of that. We believe that remuneration should be calculated, Chairperson, not as a function of political negotiations, but as a function of what that service provides to the public. And where it does not provide tangible benefits for the public, we do not believe that there should be increases. An example of this is really the police and defense departments, where there's an enormous amount of the budget going to remuneration. These areas will actually get some more money. The minister said this is to fight crime. But at the same time, there's massive liabilities that are not being dealt with. And a good example of that is the fact that there's more than 50,000 claims pending as of March 2021, which amounts to more than 50 billion rand in the police department alone. So this is very concerning, and we do believe that this needs to be dealt with. Another significant expenditure across the board is the fact that departments and SOEs and their senior officials and managers and executives get enormous salaries, in some cases 5 million rand a year or more. And we do not understand how this can be rationalized in the current situation. We don't believe it can. In terms of debt and the deficit, this is really the essence of what the MTBPS seem to be about, yet debt servicing costs will reach about 360 billion rand per year in 2024-25. And this is an enormous amount. Chair, I think it was made clear this is going to become the biggest expenditure item, crowding out everything else that government can do, everything that's being asked for in these public hearings. Government is becoming less and less able to do these things. And it's a massive concern. The temporary windfall in tax revenue is very much temporary, and I think that needs to be emphasized. We won't be able to provide this kind of support, as far as I can see, without eroding our fiscal position further, because there's no guarantee that the windfall in tax revenue now will be sustained over time. So we think that tax abuse and evasion really needs to be clamped down, and we emphasize the former. We also think that tax revenue needs to increase, and I think this is quite clear, but that needs to happen without increased rates of taxation on productive economic activity. There also needs to be a clampdown on base erosion as in illicit financial flows, and we do think that sound fiscal policy, how money is seen to be spent on the ground to benefit people, will increase voluntary compliance with the tax people and companies are expected to pay. We also believe that the PFMA and the MFMA needs to be applied more aggressively. The mechanisms are there to hold people accountable and to claw back money that is stolen or misspent in the public sector. And just to summarize, Chair, honorable members, we believe that reforms are essential, they're urgent, but tangible, urgent action steps need to happen in 2022. We haven't seen those yet. We also think that local government doesn't necessarily need experimentation and new systems. The current laws and current systems just need to be implemented, and there are examples of that. We believe that those should become benchmarks for other municipalities that are failing in the country. SOEs and their funding should be transparent. We welcome a National Water Resources Infrastructure Agency, but there needs to be a regulator as well. We also welcome some private participation and investment in the energy and transport sectors, but some SOEs must close, CHIPS, and this is where fiscal consolidation must happen. And on Sunroll and ETOLs, we urge Cabinet to take a decision on the future of ETOLs. We really think that the losses now need to be cut for some certainty in that company and for road users in Gauteng. And lastly, in terms of remuneration, we do think that that needs to be deprioritized down the road, and that there should be compensation for good work done, not compensation for the sake of compensation. And this is especially true as we enter next year and the next 3 years, where there will have to be significant fiscal consolidation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Hi, Chair. I just spoke to Honorable Judge. He's also having problems with network that side. That's why he could not respond.
Can I continue?
Just a second, Sharon.
Okay.
Should we nominate a chair from amongst ourselves?
Hello. Mangwen, is Honorable Abraham there?
Yes, Chairperson, she was here. Yes, she is here, Chair.
Noxie, are you there?
I'm here, Chair.
Yeah, can you preside in the meeting, please?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Can we get the lady who was about to present continue, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairs, and thank you, members. It's, again, a pleasure to be here, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Sharon Smulders, and I'm from the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. I'm going to be talking today about four things. I can get my presentation going. There we go. The first one is the problems, and you'll see our presentation is pretty similar to OTA's, and I will be using my full 10 minutes, so please bear with me with that. We know the problems, so we're going to touch on those very briefly. We're going to look at the promises that the government has made, but the promises that they've also broken. We're going to look at the amounts that should be in the budget that aren't included in the budget, as well as the elusive necessities of the medium-term framework that we're seeing are missing. Now, we know before COVID hit, our South Africa's fuel tank was already running on low, but thankfully the medium-term budget policy statement did say that our revenue forecasts looked much better, and they were. But the problem here is that revenue is not the problem. It's expenditure. As we can see, since 2009, expenditure has way exceeded our revenue that has come in. In fact, it's grown on average 8.8% per year, which is significantly higher than inflation. Now, the reason for this growth is primarily due to the public sector wage bill, but of bigger concern is that the expenditure, despite these enormous amounts that we are spending, this expenditure is not effective, nor is it efficient. The consequences of this, and we all know these, I'll go through these quite quickly, is that businesses are constrained. Electricity shortages, inefficient and high-cost transportation, communication platforms, red tape for small businesses that we heard in earlier presentations. I mean, just let alone from August last year to January this year, we've had over 900 service delivery protests in South Africa, and that's in a six-month period. Over the last 7 years, that averages out at 2 per day. If we look at just those 6 months, that's 5 per day. Nobody would want to invest in a country with those kind of stats. Never mind the high unemployment, where we've got one of the highest rates in the world. As we've been talking about, and as Honourable Karim mentioned, we're sitting with social grant beneficiaries reaching almost 46%. That's including the COVID grant beneficiaries, but those excluding COVID grants are 18.3 million beneficiaries, and that's expected to go up to 22.6 million in 2040. Our education, we've been ranked second last in the world for the quality of education, yet the largest proportion of our government spending goes to education. How is this possible? We spend more than most of the developed countries on education, yet we have these kind of outcomes. Another concern raised in the medium-term budget speech is the aging workforce in our education sector, and this applies equally to our police sector, which is of serious concern. Despite all of this, that might be one of the reasons why our crime in our country continues to increase, and this is despite the COVID lockdown. You'll see on the right, I've given you the stats from the recent released crime statistics that have increased, particularly in the contract crimes, the major crimes. So what do we need government to do? Well, we need them to fund crime prevention. So we do, as mentioned by OTA, support the additional funding for the police. But we urge those responsible for these budgets and spending by the police to review them to make sure that it is effective spending. And this applies equally for the law enforcement agencies because they do go hand in hand. We need to introduce proper consequence management for non-reporting of budgets, inappropriate budgeting or improper spending, especially on capital items. We need to review the government to review the workforce to make sure that we have the right skills mix and the age demographics fit the purpose that we require so that we can deliver the services that are needed. And we need to introduce and enforce productivity criteria. Now, government has made a lot of promises over the years, and we're going to look at a few of those, and a lot of those have been broken. And the four that I'll be touching on today, the first one is the expenditure ceiling. Since 2012, government has promised to maintain expenditure within these ceilings, within these levels, yet we'll see almost consistently these expenditure ceilings have been breached. This year is no different. It was breached by 56 billion rand. And what's really of concern to me is that we've now gone and increased these expenditure ceilings for the next 3 years due to the additional revenue that we got in. But my understanding, this additional revenue was temporary. So I'm not quite sure how that works. But the questions government and parliament need to be asking is, why are we consistently breaching these ceilings if we know that we can't or shouldn't be to ensure fiscal sustainability for our country? The next one where we've made a lot of promises is on accountability. The minister, the prime minister, the president mentioned that there will be performance agreements for ministers in 2018, and this will introduce more accountability. Yet if we look at the Auditor General report, as I say, year on year, it reads like a horror story. That does obviously doesn't seem to be filtering down to the lower levels of government. So again, we urge Parliament and somebody to provide us answers to the following questions. How many performance targets have been met? What was the outcome of the 50 million rand incurred for a study on the revised performance management system that was mentioned in 2020? Why has consequence management not been implemented across government as recommended by the Auditor General? And has Parliament really actively been monitoring and holding account the failures by ministers in this respect? The third area where a lot of promises have been made, and I put them here, I'll go through them quite quickly, is on the public sector wage bill. First, they said they'll try and maintain the numbers and reduce the numbers, reduce the costs. Yet if we go through all of these promises, what we actually see is that compensation has grown more quickly than GDP. And if we look at it currently or last year, compensation was 41% of our revenue coming in. This year, it's sitting at 47% of our revenue. So of the revenue that comes into our government, 47% is being spent on government wages. Now, that in itself would not be a problem if we got value for the money that we were spending, which we can clearly see by the problems that that's not happening. What is the reason for this increase? Well, we know inflation and increase in numbers are some of the reasons, but the most important one is that 40.5% increase. Now, if we look at it realistically, if we look at the average salary of a public sector employee, it's sitting around about 400,000 rand per annum. Compare this to the private sector, where that is amounting to approximately 277,000 rand. So that clearly highlights the disproportional increase in these government salaries. We've also seen that government wants employee salaries to be frozen for the next 3 years. However, we can see, is that really going to happen? The compensation ceiling was breached by 20.5 billion rand this year. And if the Constitutional Court rules that the increase in salaries is not unlawful and not invalid, then there's further budgeted costs that will need to be budgeted for that haven't been taken into account. And I'll touch on that a bit later. So again, what do we need the government to do? We need the executive, when they are negotiating these wage increases, to ensure that there is sufficient budget and they need to get approval from the National Treasury before agreeing to any amount that will be paid. National Sorry, I was muted. And we need to establish the real underlying problems with our matrix. Do we have too many employees in government? Is the incorrect employee mix? Are they unproductive? And why is there a lack of consequences for spending and performance breaches? We need to introduce performance measures to ensure the required productivity. We need to remunerate according to performance, and we need to show that we have the right mix of employees so that we can meet the needs of the citizens and that that mix aligns with the strategy of the country. The third promise that is made, or the last one, sorry, is debt. So there the minister even mentioned that fiscal sustainability depends on stabilizing debt, and the way that we're going to do this is through controlled spending. Yet our debt increases from year to year, and that results in an increase of interest expense, as Ota did also mention. Now, the concern we have here is that we're using more and more foreign debt if we look at the repayments coming up in the next few years, and that will put us at risk for exposure to currency fluctuations as well as the reduced weakening rand. So the only way that we can reduce this expenditure is if we reduce non-interest expenditure. Now, broad promises have been made by government in this regard, but again, it is questionable whether or not they'll meet these promises. So what has the budget actually missed? What are the unbudgeted amounts that need to be taken into account? Well, I've listed a few of them. The first one is SARS. The commissioner presented to Parliament last week, and he said that SARS is sitting with a 9 billion rand deficit over the next 3 years. And we can clearly see that they need this money because their compliance levels are dropping, and that is sincerely affecting taxpayers on the ground. We also are concerned that they will not meet their GRAP implementation deadline of April next year. They don't have the required funding. So we do urge Parliament to ensure that priority is given to SARS when in the dishing out of funds, because they are critical to the functioning of this budget. And we urge the National Treasury to please address the GRAP issue, because a lot of unwarranted operations are happening because of this. On the contingent liability aside, at the moment, it's going up to 1 trillion rand in 2023-2024. And the Minister announced that no further bailouts for SOEs would be provided, but we've seen no action plan to actually address the SOEs that are sitting in precarious situations. For instance, the RAF is currently sitting with a 450 billion rand accounting liabilities. We heard yesterday that the South African Police Post Office is has a problem with going concern if they do not receive 9 billion rand from government. What are we doing? Are these contingent liabilities or are these real liabilities? We need a proper action plan to decide what we do with these ailing SOEs and government entities. The Government Employees Pension Fund, as we stated before, there's a potential underfunding there of 8 to 16 billion rand. We'll know more about that in January. The water and sewage, 193 billion, a million has been allocated to that. That is not near enough to fix the dilapidated infrastructure that we have. And that's just looking at the water problems. And water is way more critical than the lack of electricity. So this needs urgent attention. We do question the need for a new agency. We just really feel that what's there needs to be managed properly, and we cannot carry on because this is really a critical resource that needs direct attention. Then on to the local municipalities. The Auditor General said the financial positions of these entities are so dire that there is significant doubt that they will meet their obligations. There's a cash shortfall of 50.7 billion rand, but the budget only allocated 17.8 billion rand over the medium term. Now, we can clearly see that these departments are budgeting for failure. If we look at the number of deficit budgets, and these were the figures released by National Treasury, for next year, we're looking at 135 are budgeting to make a loss. And the concerning thing is if we look at the actual budgets compared to what the audited outcomes are, the budgeters always seem to be understated. So this figure may definitely be understated. Serious concern in respect of the local government that has not been budgeted for. So what are we missing? What are the elusive necessities for this budget? And I think we've said this over and over. It's accountability and action plan. Two seconds.
Sharon?
Yes.
Try to round up.
I'm finished.
No. Listen, Sharon. Try to round up. I will give you a full 2 minutes to round up.
Wow. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I won't need it, but thank you. So the action, what we're missing is accountability and an action plan. And an action plan that is subject to appropriate monitoring and oversight. Now, in order to achieve the strong economic growth that our country desperately needs, we need government and parliament to stick to their promises. And I want to end off with a quote from the chairperson of SCOPA, who said it, and it was this year that he said this: effective oversight requires the political will on the part of each individual member of parliament to use the oversight mechanisms and array of tools at their disposal optimally. I really urge each member of this particular committee to please follow his guidance, to use your oversight power to stop this inefficient and ineffective spending so that the economic growth can happen and that the country can get, or the government can get more income so that we can give the actual basic grants that these gorgos that they mentioned earlier. Those are the ones that need it. Those are the people we should be protecting. Yet money is not being spent where it's meant to be spent. Please, I urge you, let's stop that from happening so that the money can go where it's really, really needed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon. You used my 1 minute and 4 seconds that I gave you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Can we have, Kosati should be next. Are we going according to that agenda? Kulek.
Yes, Chair, it's Kosatu now.
Okay, Kosatu, over to you, Matthew.
Sure. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Just give me 1 second to share our presentation quickly. But yes, good morning, members, and thanks, Chair, for giving us space as Kosatu just to share our views. And I'll just try to focus mostly on our key concerns and our key proposals as well. because of time constraints. I think the number one issue, Comrade Chair and members, is that as COSATU, we take a bit of a holistic approach to the MTBPS. I think number one is for us that we are in the deepest recession in a century. We have an economy which is limping and badly in need of stimuli. And of course, as workers, we're very concerned about an unemployment rate of 44% and rising every quarter. And I think as previous colleagues have mentioned, we have millions who are now dependent, 27 million on the state for grants. We also have thousands of companies collapsing and in danger of collapsing. We have a fiscus which is bleeding billions to, as we know, to corruption, to wasteful expenditure, to tax evasion, to mismanaged SOEs and municipalities. And of course, we also have collapsing SOEs and a very unreliable energy supply. We do share government's concern about the dangerous debt trajectory, but I think also workers and the public at large are also exhausted by the state of the economy and the state of governance. Chair, I think where we differ with government is about how do we address these issues. I think we feel government is mostly focused on austerity, for lack of a better terminology approach. We think we need a more nuanced and a stimulus approach. The budget is largely silent on the need for a stimulus plan. It's essentially focused on budget cuts through a wage bill freeze and across the board departmental budget cuts. We think there is a danger of simply focusing on austerity at all costs versus plugging the holes and stimulating the economy. We would have really wanted to see a mass stimulus program to kickstart the economy, in particular key growth sectors, and to include funding from the DFIs, but also from the private banks as well, as government has limited resources. We do want to welcome, Comrade Chair and members, the 11 billion rand that has been given so far to the Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. It's created over 500,000 jobs, giving young people a salary, experience. We do want to welcome, as we had called for, the doubling of the program over the next 3 years and an allocation of 74 billion rand. We think, in fact, we should actually be increasing it further because it can really help to create jobs and to provide experience for people. Chair, on the economic and social relief front, we do feel there's an absence of support for struggling sectors of the economy. The main relief over the past 18 months has really been from the UIF, which is workers' monies, and that's 63 billion rand. It's far greater than any relief from the state. Remember, the state doesn't contribute to the UIF, but we do want to appreciate the 32 billion rand given so far to the victims of the violence in KZN and Gauteng. But I think also to make the point that the UIF claimants are still waiting for most of the payments to come through. There's been huge delays in the UIF. We would really want to see a ramping up of the economic recovery plan implementation and especially local procurement from both government and business. We'd want to see an intervention from the state to modernize the UIF systems to ensure workers receive their monies on time. And I think we'd need to see a package of support for embattled businesses and sectors of the economy from the state and from the banks. We welcome the minister's commitment in that regard. Chair, I think we want to welcome the Treasury's commitment to releasing a policy paper in the next few days or week on our proposal to allow highly indebted or distressed workers and limited access to the pension funds. We want to appreciate the Minister's commitment to table amendment bill in February with the budget speech to provide for that. So our proposal really is just to make sure that does happen in November, the policy paper is released, and that the bill does come to Parliament with the budget in February. But it should include both public and private workers who are both equally stressed. Yes, public servants might be having their jobs and getting paid, but they are also highly indebted and supporting increasing numbers of relatives who are unemployed, etc. On the COVID-19 SRD grant, we want to appreciate it. It's provided relief to millions of the unemployed. Judging by the queues of the post office, you can see people value it. But I think we also want to say, Comrade Chair, that those recipients are not going to find work miraculously in March. Our proposals is one to extend it beyond March to see how can we increase it to the food poverty line. The payments must be moved to electronic payments for all recipients, so you don't have these queues. But we think, in essence, Chair, it's a foundation for a BIG. Chair, we want to really welcome the 500 billion rand over the next 3 years and the 100 billion rand over the decade for the infrastructure investments. That's a critical jolt to the economy. We want to support the proposed amendment of Regulation 28 to allow pension funds the right to choose to invest in infrastructure. This is also going to help inject liquidity into the economy or stimulus. Chair, proposal one is to accelerate the infrastructure program to see how can we expand localization of construction materials, as Treasury had correctly done with cement. So can we include machinery, steel, etc., and to finalize Regulation 28 amendment by the end of the year. So on the public service wage, but we don't think it's correct to compare public service, which is doctors and nurses and teachers and police officers, who largely don't exist in the private sector, versus the private sector where they pay farm workers and domestic workers what is often amounting to a slave wage. And it doesn't hide, it distorts the way you look at it, because you don't include the wage gap between the COs and the ordinary cleaners. But I think on the wage bill, Comrade Chair, the critical points is, one is for government to respect collective bargaining, to engage the bargaining councils on issues of collective agreements, the wage bill, and to honor agreements when they sign them. We think there is ways to assist government. You could have a single collective bargaining process for the entire state, a single wage regime, so you include the SOEs, the entities, etc. But also, Chair, we need to cut the fat on top if you expect those on the bottom to tighten their already very tight belts. So can we have wage caps for the senior managers in the SOEs and entities? Can we have a 25% package cut for politicians, the ministers, the senior management across the state, but even a reduction of the headcount? You don't need 34 deputy ministers, for example. Can we slash the ministerial handbook's excessive perks, for example, flights for the spouses of ministers? And I think also critically, Comrade Chair, is to reverse the very worrying headcount reductions for the police and teachers. Chair, around the issue of corruption, waste of expenditure, the MTPS was very thin on details. So I want to propose again to extend the ban on politicians doing business with the state to include the leadership of ruling parties, as well as the spouses and children of domestic or politically influential persons. We need to also give additional resources to tackle corruption to the NPA, to SAPS, to the courts. I think to empower SARS to conduct lifestyle audits. And also, amazingly, Chair, it hasn't happened yet, but to implement the blacklisting of delinquent companies from state tenders. On public procurement, Comrade Chair, we want to welcome the announcement that the bill will be ready soon. But I think we hope it needs to be strengthened significantly so that we have a single online transparent public procurement system for the entire state, not just the public service departments. This can be critical to also help support the designation of locally produced goods, the centralized procurement of certain large-scale items like medicines and textbooks, vehicles. But we also need, Chair, to really reinforce the 30-day payment rule and to make sure we do that methodically. On the revenue front, Comrade Chair, just getting towards the end, I think we must really commend the good work done by SARS to rebuild its capacity. We would want to see additional resources being given to it to continue that good work to help them to tackle tax evasion, but it needs to come with a plan to enforce customs duties collections. We'd want to urge Treasury to look further how to reduce tax loopholes and to consider increasing taxes on the wealthy through high income taxes for those earning above 1.5 million, inheritance and estate duties, and duties on luxury imports. And of course, we would hope one day to see a new funding model for the Gauteng freeways. It's quite worrying how thin on details the MTPSs are on SOEs. So we'd want to say, propose at least, can we accelerate the measures of support given to ESCOM, bring forward the additional generation capacity timeframes? But we really need a clear plans around how to stabilize, rebuild, reposition our SOEs, which are literally hanging by a thread, including jobs plans for those workers besides just simply retrenching them. And in particular, the key ones, Transnet, PRASA, the Post Office, SAA, Mango, etc. Chair, we'd want to propose that the Road Accident Fund and RABS bills, which were rejected by the previous parliament, be brought back to parliament. We can't afford the RAF to continue this on this trajectory. But also, Comrade Chair, that 2 years ago, government promised a new fuel policy regime paper. It is yet to come, but we need to come with a new regime which is more affordable to the economy. Again, Chair, that we all know the AG's reports on the warning condition of municipalities. Yeah, those very thin details on the MTPS, what is government's plans to fix it? We really hope to see clear proposals about stabilizing, rebuilding these municipalities and a roadmap to move towards district development model. So, Chair, just getting to the end, I think just quickly on the appropriations aspect, we are quite worried about the cuts to health and police, given their critical role, but also more critically, the cuts to Social Security by 17%. I think we also need to highlight the failure of basic education to meet 80% of a school sanitation target. And I would propose, Comrade Chair, that we see how can we reverse the frontline service delivery cuts, which are really hitting the CCMA health and education, also the DTI industrial financing programs, and of course the 350 grant for SASA. So I think in conclusion, Comrade Chair, we will really hope in February that a budget would be tabled which will look at stimulating the economy and supporting job creation, providing relief to the unemployed, really tackling corruption and wasteful expenditure, helping to rebuild the state and SOEs, but of course also to respect collective bargaining. I think lastly, Comrade Chair, as we all know from the election results, workers and voters are really rapidly losing faith in the government's commitments and policies. And we need to wake up fast. We're simply running out of time. But thanks very much, Comrade Chair. I'm done.
Are you? Okay, I was going to be generous with you as well. No, it's fine if you're done. Thank you. Thank you, Kosatu.
Chair, your mic is off.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. I was just saying that we are through with these presentations and we just want to call upon members to make comments, ask questions, and if necessary, give advice. Honorable members. I'm looking at the Honorable Willie Okem and Dennis Ryder in that order for now. Over to you, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, allow me to thank the presenters of these presentations that was done now. If you look at OUTA and of the presentation that Dr. Smulders did for us, I would really like to thank you for the honest way in which you have described what we all know the problems are. I'm going to be very brief because I agree with most of what you've said in any case. I think what we learned out of this again is the importance of oversight management and of consequence management. We know that we've got a bloated State Department. We've got a lot of employees earning a lot of a big amount of salaries every month. Dr. Smulders compared it to the private sector, and we could see that it is totally bloated there. So we need to have consequence management. If you look at the Auditor General's report that comes out every year, it really paints a bleak picture of what's going on. But still, every year we don't see anything happening to those people. We are just carrying on and doing the same things and expecting different results. So I want to compliment the presentation for that, and I want to urge this committee that we really get to a point where we can fully expect from our government departments to start to implement consequence management. Without it, we will not achieve what we are set out to do. Without consequence management, we will not be able to get a budget that will reach its targets and get service delivery out there to the people. We can carry on a lot about all the other stuff that was mentioned in their proposals, but that is where I want to stop my comment. It's just that without consequence management, we will not achieve anything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Okemp. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, yeah. I do also want to appreciate the inputs, not only from these three presenters, but from everyone that's presented today. I think that we, the effort that's gone into all of the presentations is appreciated. And I wish that these organizations could be more appreciated by the general population for the time and effort they put into these analyses. From outer, thank you. I think that you spoke a little bit about local government that I want to pick on. I think that you spoke about Section 139 and provinces having a bigger role in trying to fix what we've seen is a very broken system of local government. But You know, I want to challenge you and maybe say, you know, Section 139, provinces are not the silver bullet, because we see in situations like in the Northwest, where Section 139 has been put in place substantially, and hasn't had an impact. We see in situations in Gauteng, like in my favorite bugbear is Mfuleni, where Mfuleni municipality has been under provincial administration and has in fact regressed. So, you know, I know we had a long discussion as a National Council of Provinces about Section 139 at the beginning of this year. And I think that the biggest finding that we had there was the fact that there's no supporting legislation, which is called for in terms of Section 1398. And that legislation has never been finalized. Perhaps you can just give us some, or you can respond to my issue about provinces being as much of a problem as they are part of the solution. And then, of course, I don't think that you mentioned the National Culture Department as part of the problem. And I mean, we had the Deputy Minister of COGTA on record just before the local government election saying that she was shocked and surprised to hear that I think it was 62% of councillors can't use a computer. Now, I mean, the way our local government works, I can understand at the beginning of a term that many councillors who've been elected by their communities to represent their communities will not know how to use a computer. But, you know, it's a failure of COGTA itself that by the end of the term, those councillors still don't know. And to have that minister, that deputy minister coming on record and saying, well, you know, this is disgusting, that it's her own department that is the failure. And I think that National COGTA should be shielding the responsibility for these election results because of the fact that they haven't managed to you know, bring local government into a space where it's actually starting to function. So, I didn't see much mention of that. And, of course, the risk that this brings. Now, I spoke last night, honourable members, I spoke about the risks that had not been identified by the FFC and by the PBO. But the substantial risk that the failure of local government poses to South Africa and to our economy, and I mean, that was brought home again today by Arthur's presentation when they spoke about the number of municipalities that are not actually paying their Eskom bills. The matter of e-tolls, well, I don't know. I applaud Arthur for continuing on this fight. You know, I'm almost ready to give up on trying to get a resolution on e-tolls. We were promised an answer by Fikile Mbalula, Minister Fikile Mbalula, in a presentation to the NCOP. He promised us an answer within 2 weeks. That was in March. We still don't have any clarity on that, but well done to Arthur for continuing to beat that particular drum. Saika, I think that, as always, an excellent presentation, highlighting some of the big issues. The one I want to pick on is crime, and the fact of resourcing police. But just to maybe emphasize the point that the resources need to find their way down to the front line of crime fighting, and not necessarily be spent on propping up the top-heavy structure that we're finding in SAPS at the moment. And then maybe to add to what you were saying, so, you know, perhaps the detective. We had, I think, 2019 was the year of the detective. It was declared the year of the detective, and that had absolutely no impact on what we see on the ground. And I think investment in the detectives is long overdue, to act as a means of making sure that people are brought to book and receive the appropriate consequence management that we keep talking about. Cool. Ceilings on expenditure, I enjoyed that. And then the other point that I wanted to harp on about is the fact that Saka indicated the fact that targets are not met. And I think that as government or as parliament, we often look to see, you know, which departments are spending 95% plus of their budgets and so on. And you know, we congratulate departments who are able to spend all their money. What we don't do, what we consistently fail to do, and something that I've been talking about for quite some time, is the fact that a department spending its budget is not good enough on its own. A department spending its budget and meeting its targets, that's what we need to start evaluating, is if you've spent the money, have you met the targets? If you haven't met your targets, why on earth did you spend the money and what did you spend it on? What have you been doing in order to do that? Water and sewerage, I think you highlighted as well, which obviously is one of my particular interests as well. The fact that there's insufficient budget, you highlighted, and I think we've seen that certainly in the Vaal area, my home area, and the fact that there's a massive amount of 11 billion required there to fix the system, but it's just not coming. But yeah, I wonder if even if we had the money, if we've got the capacity in government to spend that money effectively. Kasatu, Mr. Parks, as usual, I agree with most of your conclusions. I don't agree with the way you got to all of them. I think that you hold a slightly outdated view about the difference between government salaries and private sector salaries. I think maybe you should go and update your homework on that one a little bit. I think that government employees are paid much better than private sector at this stage. Headcount count in SAPs and teachers. I think we really are targeting the wrong groups. Those are the people that we should be growing, bringing down crime now and improving our education system. These are the things that are going to lead to growing our economy going forward. But, I think your conclusions were all spot on. So thank you very much for that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Ryder. Any other member who wants to get in at the last minute? Okay. In the absence of members' hands, can we see who from the presenters want to respond first? Can you raise your digital hand, please, so that I can be able to recognize you, so that we finish the discussion. I think the members spoke to, okay, Sharon, you'll come first. Matthew second. Okay. Matthew second, and then Matt Johnston. I hope I have it right. Sharon?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the questions. Honorable Ryder, you're spot on with the accountability. I think that is absolutely critical going forward. And I think the only way that we're going to do that is if we do this more regularly. Unfortunately, 6 months down the line is a bit too late. Things have happened. Ensuring that targets are met on a quarterly basis is needed. So that might not be your role, but you need to push that is happening. And if it's happening, it's not been effective, and that then needs to be addressed. But on the compensation side, I mean, I agree 100%, and that's why we said we need to have a review of the compensation, because we need people on the ground. We don't have sufficiently trained people on the ground to perform the services that we need. Of huge concern is that the police department, I read yesterday, lost over 5,000 people just between last year and this year. And that might be the problem for the issues that we had with the riots, but we really need to fix that urgently. And for me, again, the water is absolutely critical. Electricity is one thing, but with water, until we fix that whole ecosystem, and it starts one little bit at a time, from the ground up, and checking that the things that are happening. I mean, if we look at the post office, they reached 6 out of 17 of their targets, according to their annual report. And they're not the only one. I mean, it's highlighted in the Auditor General report. We need to make sure that these people are held accountable, and there must be reasons why these things have not, targets have not been met, etc. But crime, water, electricity, and the oversight overall, my biggest request is that, we need to start with the financial side, because if you don't have the finances in place,
Nothing else will work. Yes, we need the expertise, et cetera, but if you don't have the money to pay the expertise, we're going to lose the expertise. So on the grounds, particularly local government, we need to make sure that the people tasked with managing the budgets are suitably qualified and have the appropriate skills to be able to do that, because that is the cornerstone and the starting point for any of the departments meeting their targets. So I think that's where we need to start, make sure that the finance departments are suitably qualified and have the necessary expertise to guide that department with the funds that have been allocated to them. And then obviously from there flows the consequence management for the targets. But yeah, I think that's it from our side. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sharon. Matthew Parks first, then Matt Johnson.
Sure. No, thanks, Comrade Chen. No, it's always confusing when more than one person is allowed to have the name Matthew. It causes endless confusion. I think, Comrade Chen, I think to the two honourable members, Honourable Okamba and Ryder, I think they raised both concerns around the wage bill. So on the issue, is it bloated? Well, look, just to give you one set of stats, in 1994, we had about 34 million South Africans and about 1 million public servants. Today, we have about 60 million South Africans, so nearly almost double population, but the public service headcount is about 1.3 million. And in fact, we're seeing many instances around health, education, et cetera, where the ratio is declining at alarming levels. So in schools, it's causing a higher teacher-learner ratio. We saw on the police force, where in the budget it says it's going to cut it by about 6,000 police officers, yet our population is rising and our crime levels are significantly high. So we don't agree with that. I think where we've really seen growth, which we don't support, is a growth at management level, at policy level. We think that needs to be redeployed and shifted to frontline service delivery level. But also, Comrade Chair, if you go to Home Affairs, you'll see queues, not because civil servants are slow, but queues often because they don't have sufficient staff on duty. Instead of having six staff on duty, they might only have two staff on duty, in addition to the IT system not working properly, etc. Chair, I think why we say it's difficult to compare apples to oranges is that in the public service, you have largely professionals. So you have 70,000-plus nurses, about 30,000 doctors, you have about 350,000 teachers. So these are people with degrees, et cetera. It's at a much higher proportion than the average population, the average workforce, which wouldn't have as many professionals. But also, if you want to compare them, well, then look, let's compare what the nurse or the doctor makes in the public service compared to what they make in the private sector. And you'll see the public sector actually falls behind the private sector for those professionals. And that's why you see constantly a brain drain of skilled public servants going to the private sector, be they teachers or going to the Middle East, to New Zealand, to Europe, to Canada, if they're health professionals. And that really is causing a huge problem, quite an alarming rate. So I think also that in the private sector, you're including 800,000 domestic workers. You're including 800,000 farm workers. You're including construction workers, mine workers, et cetera. And these are professions which you don't have in the public service. So I think we need to really compare apples to apples. Equally, Comrade Chair, a police constable earns under 200,000 rand a year. If you look at throughout the police ranks, the pay is actually quite low. Now, we expect them to compete against criminals who are well-resourced, who are easily able to tempt them with bribes. Same thing with correctional services. So we think we need to have a much more nuanced approach to it. I think also, Chair, we need to have a broader discussion, just last two points, around the wage gap. In the public service, it's about 13-1 between what a cleaner earns at the bottom and what a DG earns on top. In the private sector, it's about three times that. We need to have a discussion that is it correct for publicly listed companies, like in the retail sector or the mining sector, where the CEOs make 100 million rand a year and the cleaner makes 60,000 rand a year, for example. And there is a companies bill, which we hope the DA would support, which now will require large listed companies to begin to disclose the wage gap as a way of trying to address this apartheid legacy. Chair, I think lastly, we are very sensitive to government's fiscal constraints. We can't be blind to it. If government is forced to default, to go to the IMF, it would be workers, including the public service, who would pay a very heavy price. So hence we've said there are some ways to assist government. Have a single wage regime for the entire state, a single collective bargaining process for the entire state, put caps on what management earns in the SOEs and the entities, where often it's higher than what the president earns. Let's see if we can redeploy staff to frontline posts. How can we consolidate duplicate entities or duplicate SOEs or even municipalities? So there are ways to assist, but it just requires government to engage with labor and see how can we assist protecting lower middle-income earners, workers from inflation, but also how to stabilize and to save the state. And that's why also, Comrade Chair, lastly, we focus on how can we assist SARS, how can we tackle corruption, how can we grow the economy, because these all issues require nuanced, holistic approach, and not simply to think that if we pay nurses less, we'll resolve our myriad of problems, and we won't. In fact, it might make it worse. But thanks very much, Comrade Chair, honorable members.
Thanks, Matt. We will now have Matt Johnston, followed by Helen. I think it's Helen or Henny. Henny Swanepoel. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for the questions from the honorable members. You did get my name correctly. And it's not Matthew, it's just Matt. Chair, to comment firstly on what was said about oversight and consequence management.
Oh, I thought Matt was a nickname, or just a nickname short for Matthew. I'm sorry for that.
No problem, sir. It's a common mistake.
Okay.
To say we very much agree with the need for oversight and consequence management. And this is something that we've been saying over and over, Chair. I just want to comment on some of the silence from members, because there were very few questions and comments, although those are appreciated. Before, when we came to these forums, there would be a lot of disagreement with some of the things we say. And there's not so much disagreement today, and I take that as agreement, even if it's tacit. And I think we really hope to see reflected in your report, Chair, from this public hearing, the comments that are made here, and hopefully that agreement that I'm seeing is real. And we really hope to see a substantive response from National Treasury as well. In terms of the oversight and consequence management, I think it's important to say that we do see a big role for National Treasury to play. There are certain provisions in the MFMA, in the PFMA, that we believe are not being implemented. Blacklisting is an example. But there are various ways, according to the legislation, where money that is misspent, that is wasted, or that is stolen, as a result of the wrong people being in positions of procurement decision-making, that money could be clawed back. And we don't see those things being implemented. But also, we really think there's an important role for civil society to play. Honourable members, I want to say, in response to you, Honourable Ryder, and the comments on local government, I think I want to make it very clear. I don't want to be misunderstood. As far as provinces and Section 139 is concerned, I agree. It's not a silver bullet, and that's sort of the point I was trying to make. Northwest is a good example. My family live there, and basic service delivery does not happen. So people are really struggling, and businesses are struggling in particular. That's an enormous issue, and the provinces that have taken control of certain municipalities really are not doing what they are supposed to be doing. And in that, I believe, and we're working towards this, we're trying as civil society to invest in solutions where communities can help themselves. There's a lot of despair. There's a lot of despondency about government's willingness or ability to fix the problems that it has, to a large part, allowed to happen. So matters are being taken into communities' own hands, and we saw that in response to the unrest. And this is why when more money is allocated to the police and to the Defense Department, it has to be questioned. If more money is allocated to healthcare and to education, like some of the other presenters said, it has to be questioned whether that additional allocation will really make a difference. Will it really precipitate in more service delivery that people can see and feel? And at the moment, it does not seem as if that will happen. I want to agree that National COCTA has not played its role. We think the government in general has not played its role. Parliament has arguably not played its role either. And there's a big role to play, Chairperson and honourable members, not only in this committee, but in others. And in previous sessions like this, we've recommended that there's more collaboration between portfolio committees and these standing committees and select committees to deal with these problems in a way that SCOPA, for example, really has. That's one committee, and they have limitations. But they have intervened in certain levels, in certain places where local government has absolutely collapsed. And that's welcome. We would really like for civil society to be part of that solution, and that's why we recommend that the budgets and how money is spent at local government be more transparent, be more inclusive, that people on the ground in these communities, some of whom really have some expertise to bring to the table, that they can participate and try and inform and enrich the budgeting process, which at the moment is really not changing in reaction to the fact that the expenditure is not equating service delivery outcomes. So I want to emphasize that. And in terms of ETOLs, yes, many promises have been made. And I think we are saying the same as Kusatu is saying, as the Gauteng province is saying. It is virtually only cabinet that is not willing to make a decision and accept the sunk costs of a failed scheme. And I don't think, Honorable Ryder, that the praise should come to Outer or to any organization. It should come to the people of Gauteng and the motorists on that road who refuse to submit themselves to a system that they did not agree to, that they're not sign up for. And government needs to accept this. The figures are very much reflecting this. SANRAL seems to be accepting this. And so I think it's really incumbent on this committee, who've heard several times from us that this is a failed scheme that needs to be resolved. This committee can go to cabinet, can make recommendations to Treasury that plans for alternative funding and an alternative funding policy be urgently put forward. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you again to all the members for the opportunity and questions.
Okay. Sonipul, please, can you take the step?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Just apologies from my side for earlier Telkom's fibre left me in the lurch this morning, but I drove to another spot to just quickly respond. Firstly, I think from our side, just to express appreciation for all the inputs and presentations that were made. I think there are critically important issues raised there that should form part of the budget discussions. Just to note, the Treasury usually does not respond in detail to the presentations during the sessions on the day. We have got a scheduled time frame on Friday where the Treasury will respond to all the issues. But be assured, we have taken detailed note of all issues raised, and we will make sure that we respond to those in detail on Friday. Honourable Chair, on your question regarding the social grants, I agree with your comment earlier that this is a discussion that needs to be taken to a higher level. The grants issue is a very emotive issue that is close to the heart of every South African. But what we must realise is that changes in spending will result in very large increases in total expenditure numbers, and that must be considered in a sensible way. I think we need to think of the grants in the context of our broader social spending and the total social wage, which, as Honourable Karim pointed out at this point in time, is forms a very large portion of government spending. But we should also then consider that in light of the size of government debt and how we've got to deal with that going forward. But, I don't want to get into detail on those issues at this point in time. I think there must be a discussion that will deal with the grants issue specifically. We will make sure that the Treasury then responds to all the issues that's within our purview in our time slot on Friday. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Okay, Mr. Swanepoel, are you representing Treasury? Can I ask?
Yes, ma'am. Apologies. I should have just introduced. I'm in the budget office, in the office of the DDG, of the budget office. So Mr. Edgar Shishi will be responding to all the questions then on Friday, as we have noted and informed him. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Just to correct the area that says they might not be able to address everything, they must make an attempt to do that. Otherwise, there is also a way of combining the issues that have been raised, as you could hear that the stakeholders agree in some areas and in some broad areas. For example, the issue of consequence management is an issue that cuts across and can be dealt with sufficiently, as has been raised by all the stakeholders almost. Secondly, there is an issue on the participation of other government departments. I saw Honorable Ryder also wrote here in the chats about the role that Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Department also has to play, because National Treasury is a department that is transversal and therefore will affect each and every department. So I think we also need to deal with that. There's COGTA, for example, having been to local government elections recently and having had to face a lot of service delivery protests before that. And here has been mentioned, I think it was COSATU who mentioned the issue of home affairs. It could have been mentioned by the other stakeholders as well, which is a critical department, but also seems to be understaffed whenever you find it. And in fact, there are towns that do not even have the office. So the towns, small towns like your Takastad, Hofmeyr and others have to move to other towns. And when they have traveled to other towns for services, they find that in fact servers are down for the whole day. Or they find that there's just one official serving thousands of people from all those surrounding towns. And yes, the other area that I can talk to is the area of decision making. Of course, there is no decision that can be taken baselessly. You have to be responsible as you take decisions. You have to make sure that this is a public sector. When decisions are taken, they are taken for the majority of the people of this country. And therefore, when you make a decision to change something, you must be cognizant of the fact that you're not changing it for a few, but you're changing it for the majority of the people. At this point, I want to give over to the chairpersons that are here present. I have seen that Honorable Tekeleri Mahlangu is on the platform. Honorable Maswangani is also on the platform. Honorable Yunus is also on the platform. Can we get comments from the honorable leaders? Yunus?
Chair, did you call on Honorable Karim?
Yes, but I started with...
What's that?
In terms of the agenda, Honorable Members, it is that time when the chairpersons have to make some concluding remarks. So I was calling on all of you who are currently on the platform. Yourself... Yunus, there's Dix and there's Job. You can go first, Dix.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable. I'm back on the platform. I also want to appreciate the presentations, all of them, and also welcome the comment by Mr. Swanepoel from Treasury. He said exactly what I expected him to say because he couldn't respond in details out of the cuff. But there's a session on Friday for Treasury to respond on issues that has been raised. And I think the responses will be informed because they'll go back to Treasury as a team and look at the presentation, the concerns that has been presented, the recommendations and proposals. So we will hear from them, and hopefully the stakeholders will be following on their responses and hear how Treasury is responding. But also from the part of the from us as the committees, the two committees, I think we are with you. We hear what you're saying, and you also speak the language that we've been speaking. We understand your concerns, and this is the concerns. These are our concerns as well. Thank you, Chairperson. If I can request that, as all the two chairpersons have commented and closed the meeting, that members of the Select Committee on Appropriation, they must stay on the line. Please don't leave the meeting because we have another meeting to deal with. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just very quickly from my side, just some observations, right? These are things we should mediate within the committee on Friday and Tuesday when we process the report. The first observation, Chairperson, is that, Comrade Dikeledi said, it's good that people are coming to our committee. I know it's an immensely frustrating thing for them because they raise the same issues year in and year out, and we don't act on them in the way they want. And it's difficult because I think in a sense it reflects that we ourselves as Parliament and the government and the ANC as a whole are not moving fast enough on dealing with the issues, never mind the complexities and difficulties of the almost, I don't know what word to use, Jeff, surrealistic situation within it, so unreal where we are. So, and there's no easy answers, obviously, but it's just that I think that it's tiresome that the civil society actors come here and keep repeating the same things, and we never seem on our side to be able to act on those things and persuade the executive to do so. So many of the things said today, regrettably, have been said before, Chairperson. And we're saying the same things we've said before. And we need to get out of this impasse, Chairperson. Because soon the few people that are appearing before our committee will shrink away. As it is, there are key stakeholders that are not here. And yet on the other hand, Chairperson, I hope we'll all agree, like never before, frankly, maybe in the first 3-4 years after the democracy came about, and we ever needed civil society like we do now. We're all in this boat together. Never mind all our differences. There's surely certain common things that will bind us. And without civil society as a parliament, we are meaningless, really. So we need to find ways outside of this exchange with the civil society stakeholders on what we do to avoid the same situation repeated in February and October next year. So I would like to suggest, Chairperson, that we put this issue on the agenda, obviously for our respective study groups, but also for the committee to process. Because it's like, you know, same old in slightly different form. Apart from that, I want to repeat what Comrade Dikeledi says, that just to remind our colleagues here, in fact, all of them are familiar with us, but on Friday what will happen, obviously, is that Treasury will give a more considered reply having looked at your written and oral representations. Then what will happen is civil society, you will be asked to reply. Then we give Treasury a chance to reply to you, so both sides have been thoroughly heard. It's only after then that we engage with you and then process our thoughts over the weekend. We also want to remind you yet again, it will make life easier for the chairs, but especially the research staff. They do the initial drafts, and we keep saying rather than us summarizing your main points, all of your full submissions appear on the website in some form or another, or they're available via the secretaries from any person interested from the public. But the important thing is that you summarize between half a page and one page the key points you want us to put in the report. And usually what happens is the staff more or less present, as long as it's within a reasonable number of words, Chairperson, what you as stakeholders say, we just edit and so on. So it will be very good if by 10 a.m. on Friday, all of you made submissions, present between half a page and one page of what you'd like to be in the report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Comrade Joseph.
Okay, Chairperson, I fully agree with what the other chairpersons have said, Comrade Karim and Comrade Dikeledi, in terms of their observation and also the way forward that Treasury will be coming here on this platform on Friday to respond to all what the stakeholders and members have raised. So I fully agree with the observations of the other two chairpersons. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. I think this brings us to the end, as the chairpersons have already spoken. And there is some advice that is given here in terms of what the various stakeholders can do on Friday or even before that. And we will meet with you on Friday. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
Ms. Abraham, it's Alan. Can I just say something?
Okay. Announcement, Alan.
Thanks, Chair. It's just the Standing Committee on Finance is meeting 6 o'clock this evening, from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's with the National Treasury on the annual report. I will send the link for the meeting in the next 15 or 20 minutes, and I'll also send through an updated presentation and research brief during the course of the afternoon. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Alan. That's it for finance. Cheers, everybody.